So you've been writing this column for about 20 years, doing the podcast 5 years. How have your views changed? For instance, did you come to writing and doing the podcast with these views on monogamy, or have they developed?
They've developed through observation, particularly how passionate I am about monogamy being a problem. And again, I say if a monogamous commitment is what you want, you should have it. You should go find it. And I believe that people should honor the commitments that they make. So I'm not saying everyone has to live like I live. I just think you need to be realistic. If you're with somebody for 50 years and they only cheated on you once or twice, they were good at monogamy. Not bad at it. They were good at it. And if we could only think that way, we could save a lot of marriages and a lot of prevent a lot of suffering for kids. But my views have changed a lot. I used to hate straight people. Now I feel bad for them. I mean, that was the joke when the column started. I was 26 and I was going to write about straight people and straight sex with the same contempt that heterosexual advice columnists had always employed writing about gay people and gay sex when it would come up in their columns. So it's mostly me sneering at straight people. And when I started writing the column, I was 26 years old. All my friends were dying of AIDS. Ronald Reagan ruined the world, in my opinion. And George H.W. Bush was president, and he was just, you know, an extension of Ronald Reagan. And I was still really angry about the bullying I'd endured, about my friends dying, about the indifference that the culture and the society had displayed when gay people started dying of AIDS. And I was mad. And then I took it out on straight people, and it was sort of like a joke, but not a joke. But then I started getting all these letters from straight people about their problems. And, you know, and one day, like the Grinch, my heart grew 3 sizes, and I started to feel bad for them, particularly straight guys. I'd never really had straight guy friends, and then I went to The Stranger, and like most everyone who worked there was a straight guy, and I was the gay guy answering questions from straight people. I started hanging out and drinking with straight guys. And I'd been in theater, and like all my friends were fags, and I had never really hung out with straight guys. And I just realized after getting their letters and hanging out with them that it sucks to be a straight guy. They run the world, but that includes like running the 7-Eleven. Like, it's not all glamour. And heterosexual males are really fenced in. Because being a straight guy is defined as not being a girl and not being a fag. So anything that's remotely girly or faggy is suspect. And straight guys are policed not just by each other, but by women and by fags. So the latitude that women enjoy to like go to college and be a lesbian for 18 months, right, and have a girlfriend and then be straight identified. Nobody goes, you must be a lesbian. You couldn't. No one doubts that. Or to have just one same-sex experience, even. Or a three-way, a girl-girl-boy three-way, and have some same-sex contact in that context. Nobody looks at a woman who's done all that and says, oh, she's really a dyke. She couldn't possibly have done that if she weren't. And they look at straight guys and say that, right? And that's just like the threesome same-sex contact example. There's also like the straight guy who likes to cook, the straight guy, anything that like takes them the slightest bit off this, you know, Jim Belushi idea of what it means to be a straight guy can bring their world crashing down. And it really undermines their identity. It makes them feel very insecure. And once I realized that, I just started to feel bad for them. And I'm getting all these letters from straight guys who, you know, like to have a finger in their butt, who like to cross dress, who, you know, had met the one guy, right? And they're so freaked out because they met the one guy who blipped onto their dick radar, right? Who went into their reptile brain, and their reptile brain wanted to make that guy pregnant. And I've met that girl. I've, you know, the lesbian firefighter who I just think is so foxy. And I go, ah, oh my God, she's so foxy, but she's a woman, but she's so foxy. She looks like Ralph from Sound of Music with muscles. And I enjoy that feeling of being sort of dragged outside my normal sexual response-a-thon. And it doesn't make me feel like I'm not gay or that I'm having a crisis. But the straight guy who meets the one guy who is feminine enough or in drag looks girly enough or whatever can have a crisis meltdown that leaves him impotent. How sad for the straight guys. So if there's anything that's changed in 20 years, I feel really sad for straight guys. I feel sorry on the monogamy issue, on the porn issue, on the one-off same-sex attraction issue. I feel bad for them. Women are crazy. And there's not a lot of advice columnists that will say that to a woman. the women who write me.
They're loving right now.
The skewed sample, right?
Exactly.
That I enjoy, that I get. The letters pouring in from women who think that it's cheating when he looks at porn. And you just want to say, no, looking at porn allows him to have some variety without cheating. And you should be happy he looks at porn.
The cool thing about the podcast is...
as long as it's not all-consuming and blah, blah, blah. As long as he doesn't have a problem with it, as long as he's not compulsive, as long as he's not neglecting your needs and porn is eating his life. With those caveats.
Yeah, okay. The cool thing about the podcast is the format. So all these people will call in with questions. You'll do a little snippet at the beginning that's sort of a current events, news type issues. And then the podcast will start with real people calling in. These are their voices, the messages that they've left. Then you'll give a response. And sometimes you'll even call them up and you'll air the conversation that you have with the person who called. It's awesome. When did you decide to do that format?
It wasn't like we picked the format. We had certain limitations that imposed that format. You know, we don't have a radio studio. It's just me and some cables in a room and a couple of tech-savvy at-risk youth. And we can't, you know, my schedule is insane. I'm always traveling and speaking and running around the country. So I can't say, you know, I tape this from 10 to noon on Thursdays every week. Call me. Because I don't know where I'm going to be on any given Thursday. So we record the podcast at all different hours and all different days, and then we put it out on Tuesday. So people would leave their questions, and then we started asking them to leave a phone number in case we had a follow-up question. And then we call people back, and if we can get them on the phone on the fly, we talk. What you don't hear, what's often edited out, is I will call somebody, and they're sitting in the room with the person that they're having the issue with, or they're at work, or they're with their mother, or they're with their kids. And we'll get them on the phone for a second, and they'll go, I'll say, can you get someplace? And they'll say yes. And then we'll sit there for 10 minutes and wait for them to get someplace. And then we'll call them back and then we'll have a conversation. So it's really ambush what we do.
It's so great because you're right. It sets them off guard a little bit, but they're talking with you really openly. And it's really like two buddies having a conversation about relationship problems. It's a great dynamic that you have with these callers.
Thanks. I wish we had more technical capabilities, but we need to invest in a sound into this. We should come here and record it.